Blog Talk Radio.
This is Renegade Broadcasting.
Come on, man.
Okay. Still hear me? Oh, this is frustrating. Okay. It looks like we have settled the technical problems here. Welcome to the show. This is Andrew in North Carolina filling in for, I guess now the new host for Wednesday is going to be Nick. He also goes by Bread and Circus. So I'm just filling in for him tonight. Don't really have a whole lot planned, but I figured that we could maybe try to talk about some solutions or some new ideas as far as what we can do to better ourselves in the times that we're currently facing. I'm seeing that somebody says there's an echo. I don't know if maybe Kyle can fix that or not. Also, Solly said play an intro song. Okay, I'm just going to play a song. Hopefully we can fix all these problems in between then.
Hey, sing light of drug over the stars and hall till Norge has course of mess and the plans go to France. Slipper han fans in grav der vanket så blodigen panne vel og før dag de kommer vel over den hede vel Romstads kuster han styrer i land er klærte seg for en fjende han voldte efter 1400
Hello, and welcome to the March 26th edition of, just a show on Renegade Broadcasting, I guess. Sorry for all the technical issues earlier. I'm not really sure what the whole problem was there. But I do want to announce that it looks like Nick also goes by Bread and Circus, is the host for Wednesday nights now. Not sure why he couldn't make it tonight, so I'm kind of filling in last minute. Didn't have anything planned for the show. I tried to gather a few ideas before it started here in the little time that I did have. But tonight, I'll just read you the show description. The title of tonight's show is Clearing a New Path. It says, tonight we will be having an open discussion on creating a new future. Topics may include political systems, economic solutions, and becoming more self-sufficient. So really, the key of tonight's show, or the main point, will be productivity and creating. That's really, what I think we should do a little bit more. I think we spend a lot of time identifying the problems or the issues, but we don't spend as much time as I think we should in trying to solve or at least come up with a viable idea for a solution. within the two-party system in the United States, you always hear that, Republicans, they just want to tell everybody no and that they can't do this and they can't do that and that. The Democrat Party is the party with solutions, and they're good at coming up with solutions. The problem is that they've never come up with a solution that ever really worked, or at least worked the way that they said they did, or they said it would. A good example of that would be the healthcare bill. Watching that over the past few years has been quite a bread and circus, so to speak. First it was not a tax, explicitly not a tax, and then it was a tax, and it's changed so many times. It's supposed to be affordable, cheaper than, what everybody else was already paying for their health insurance, and now it's skyrocketed. You have lower class people that may be qualified for things like Medicaid and Medicare that are going to lose that coverage and be forced to pay for Obamacare or pay more for their care. terrible state of things currently in America in many different ways. And I think the real solution behind healthcare is to fix the diets of most people, at least to a certain extent. Went to the grocery store today, and I mean, just look at the shelves of garbage, just crap. I mean, the grocery stores are just full of stuff that is not, that should not be food. I mean, it should not be considered food in any way. It's processed, loaded with sugar, loaded with, corn syrups or artificial sweeteners. Just ridiculous how that has exploded over the past, probably the past 20 years. I'd love to have some calls. Maybe you guys have some ideas of some solutions, maybe, some things in your own life or some steps in your own life that you've taken to combat the insanity that is the Jewish system or the kosher system or whatever you really want to call it. The number is 347-633-9657. That is 347-633-9657. Also, if you go to the Renegade Broadcasting Blog Talk page, you can Skype in through there as well, free of charge, if that's how you want to do it. Just putting that out there for anybody that wants to call in. I don't see any, I see one caller, but I think they might just be listening. I'll I'll pick them up in a little bit. I'll try them and see if that maybe they want to talk. But let's see. One thing that I've looked into recently, here where I live, we have a small garden. Nothing really large at all. We established it last year, so it's new, and it took a lot of work to really get it prepared because the topsoil was just absolutely terrible where I'm at. And where I live, I'm surrounded by fields pretty much on every side. I believe last year they grew soybeans, you know, your GMO Monsanto soybeans, and they were spraying these fields like, I think they probably sprayed them like 6 times in total. And every time they sprayed these fields, you could tell, I mean, you could smell it in the air, and it would kind of linger for days. Have a lot of cotton around here as well, and they spray the heck out of the cotton. I don't know what they spray that stuff with, but it's terrible, absolutely terrible stuff. You can smell it from a mile away. And I'm sure that's not safe at all for us to be even probably anywhere around that, those chemicals. But, you know, we've had some problems growing as well due to the, you know, the things that they're spraying. You could tell plants that we had closer to the edge of the field were, affected by the different, I guess, weed killers, Roundup, whatever the heck it is they spray on this stuff. And it's a huge business. The pesticide industry, herbicides, and what have you. A lot of money to be made in that could be better utilized towards spending to more sustainable practices, safer practices. Yeah, I think people think the gardening issue is a little funny sometimes, I guess. But I think it's something that's important that we at least need to know. I think we should at least know a basic knowledge of growing our own food, what that entails. I'm no expert. That's more my wife's side of things. That's something that she knows a little bit more about and has a deep interest in. I have an interest in it, but not, you know, not as much as she does. But, you know, we're getting this established. And, you know, one of the first things I learned as far as getting into gardening is that, you know, you need to keep a compost pile. And we didn't really have anything to put on it last year to get it established. But we're looking at doing that this year, actually, you know, buying out some things or utilizing the free or very cheap resources that we have to create a compost pile. And one of the things I've just now started into is worm farming or worm casting production, which been researching for a while now on it, you know, on and off. I had planned to do it, and now I've finally gotten down and got some things ready. I got my worms ordered, so they will be here probably next week. And it's a kind of an interesting science behind it. Essentially, you're taking worms, thousands of worms, and putting them either in a bin or, you know, in essentially a compost pile, and they break down the food and they break down the soil, and you end up with a really nutrient, biodiverse product to put on your plants that your plants love. They thrive in that environment, and the current way that food is produced, at least in this country, through your, you know, big factory farms and your industrial farms, I don't know what you call them, poison farms, is that they really deplete the soil of all the nutrients in the way that they farm, and they spray these liquid fertilizers, these petroleum-based fertilizers on the plants, on the soil, to help rebuild them year after year. And it's really not a sustainable practice. It's not a natural or normal practice. How it ever became accepted, I'm not even really sure. It's ridiculous. I've lived around it pretty much my whole life and kind of seen it, and it's just seems very inefficient and wasteful. Farmers that have to have combines for like, what, 2 months out of a year maybe? And these combines cost brand new like upwards to $500,000, I think. So that doesn't seem like a very cost-productive venture to go into, at least at this time. And when you really look at statistics on farming, at least in this country, most farmers do not make really any money at all. They're just surviving, paying the few employees that they have, which is why you have illegal immigrants working at these places, because they can't really afford to actually, you know, pay a decent wage. I've met quite a few farmers throughout my life. I've never met one yet that was like super rich or anything. Most of them live pretty simply, even though they're, you know, running thousands of acres, you know, creating thousands of acres worth of food crops, cotton, tobacco, et cetera, pretty much anything like that. It's sad. It's really sad to see the state of farming in this country. But the good thing is that it's starting to come back. You have new people entering the game doing interesting new stuff, cheaper, more sustainable practices. But I'd seen a video actually about a week ago. This guy went up to a place somewhere up on the Northeast, I believe, and the guy was a veteran. He'd served, I think, in Iraq. It might have been Afghanistan or both, but he was an explosives engineer and realized when he got home that he couldn't find a job. I mean, he's an explosives engineer. There isn't exactly a whole lot of jobs, you know, in civilian work, at least in that field. And so he started his own compost company, and he deals with local restaurants and grocery stores, and they give him food waste. And he picks up the food waste and, you know, throws it on the pile along with, I think, like wood chips or leaf mulch. And he just waits for it to break down. And they sell the compost, and they also sell the worm castings. He has these huge worm, as you call them, worm trays that he puts this compost in and lets the worms break it down and then packages that up and sells it. And this brings us to, you know, our own self-sustainability in the sense that, you know, if this guy can do it, you know, why can't we do it, you know, in cooperation with your local farmers, your local gardeners? You know, something like this would be very, I think, very possible and very low cost to get into. It's something that could be started part-time, you know, in your spare time. And that's what I'm hoping maybe to end up in someday. I'm still doing the work that I do, still doing paint work, but it's been kind of slow lately due to the weather and just the economy really as a whole. So maybe that will eventually be something in the future for me. We'll see. I would like to help out, you know, my local community as much as possible. Local is more efficient and more economical. Makes sense, you know, spend money in your own area, keep your own money in your own area. Don't be sending your US dollars to China for cheap products and crap so a shipping company can make thousands of dollars, billions of dollars, you know, off of everybody through shipping these products from China. It's really just insane, the logistics of our economy as it currently stands is really wacky, and it just goes to show who's really controlling things here. We do have a caller, a 239. I'm going to pick up 239. 239, what's your name and where are you calling from?
Hello, is this Andrew?
Yes.
Hi. Well, I go by Get Me a Name in the chat room, so I guess just call me Get.
Okay.
That's good.
Okay.
So, I've just been listening in. I just I don't really ever get to call in live or even watch the shows live or anything in the chat room. I mostly am just a podcast kind of guy. But yeah, just thanks for picking up the slack for the show tonight. And you know, I was just listening to what you're talking about, and I was going to ask you, do you ever make any of your own wine or beer?
That's another thing I kind of wanted to touch on tonight. Probably about 3, maybe 4 months ago, I got into, you know, beer and wine making. Well, actually beer and mead making, which mead would be a honey wine.
Yeah. Kind of a wine.
So
yeah.
Far,
it's pretty.
Yeah, so far, not as successful as I would have hoped. Mm-hmm. I've had to experiment a lot, but overall I've had drinkable product that was cheaper than anything I could buy at the store.
Yeah, I find even the kits are pretty affordable. They're a little expensive to buy, I guess, but considering how much wine or beer you get from them, it's not too bad, you know, and I know you can get all that stuff online. It's pretty easy, you know. I think if you're trying to wing it and figure out how much of the, say, juice to put in and how much yeast, et cetera, to use, you know, it might get a little complicated. You know, certainly you could experiment and figure it out. It's not a big deal. But I use the kits, and, yeah, I've had a great success. I've been doing it for years, and I don't really even go to liquor stores anymore. I mean, I haven't done that for years, and you know, it's just so nice because that's one less thing. You're talking about you know, corporations basically making money off you, and well, that's one less area where you know, they get my money. And you know, same with the I don't do the gardening, you know, but often thought I probably should. I know you can probably get quite a bit of produce from the garden, but I guess for me, you know, we'd have to store it for most of the year, and I don't know, so I'd probably be, I have to get into canning or something, or figure out, you know, I don't know. I know people dry quite a bit of it or something, but yeah, I just haven't gone into the garden yet. But yeah, just kind of all about self-sustaining. You know, my big thing always is trying to figure out where money comes from. And I spent a lot of years researching that and was pretty frustrated with everything. I was basically surprised when I finally ran across someone who really explained it to me. And the way they really actually explained it to me was not to tell me how the system works, because it's just too damn convoluted, and it's actually, and we all know who it's run by, right? And we all know who it's for. So what he did instead was he explained to me an alternative. And I guess you could call it his theory, although I think he probably lifted it from some other folks, be quite honest with you. But, you know, I didn't really care where he got it, because it's a good idea. And basically, it just involves this. And I might as well just tell you, because it's just basically why every time I call in, I mean, I have to mention this. Sorry.
Okay. There
you go. But you were talking about farming earlier, and I, you know, immediately when you're saying farming, you know how difficult it is to farm today, and I this to me, it has to do with, well, where does our money come from? You know, that's the first thing that comes into my mind. It's like, well, no one can afford to farm because the cost of borrowing money is so high, and you know, people, you can't go into farming and sustain your family on it unless you borrow money. And that is basically the, you know, true with all things we're talking about in our economy today, is everybody has to borrow money. And basically, getting back to my buddy here that was explaining to me, you know, where money comes from, and well, through, you know, a series of conversations and, you know, documents. He produces letters and he shows me all these things. He's just like, it's like all of our money is being originated at banks. And I guess, you know, probably a lot of listeners right now are probably just going, well, yeah, duh, we know that. But,
yeah.
You know, I the point of him, what my friend did was he took it one step further. He's like, you know, well, what really should be happening all along is a nation state. I don't know if he used that word exactly. I throw that in there. But, I mean, he's saying basically a country should be producing their own currency and then paying for their infrastructure. And he used roads as his example, but you know, I would include railroads, electricity, you know, electric grid, you know, to some extent even aviation nowadays is considered, you know, pretty much a national or a transportation source. But basically the key phrase there is just paying for the infrastructure. Because right now, when we meaning in this country, when they build roads or do anything infrastructure-wise, they go to a bank and they borrow it. And it isn't like, you know, you or I going to borrow money for a mortgage or something like that. It's not quite like that. What they do is they take the government produces a bond. And they used to do it with paper and red ink, but now they don't even do that. They just use it electronically. But they generate a bond, and then they take it to a bank, or they send it to a bank electronically, and then this bank will exchange that for I don't even call it money because I can't. It's purchasing power. But then the government then ends up having numbers in an account that it can then spend on its road or infrastructure. If it, and so this person was able to really kind of explain to me, well, you know, why does our government bother that process? Why don't they just skip the bond part and just go ahead and just, you know, create the currency and spend it on the infrastructure? And it did all kinds of great things. He's like, you know, from there, what you'd then have is you'd have a road that was actually paid for. That you did. So, in other words, you didn't put the country in debt. You didn't put anyone in debt to build that road. You don't have to tax anyone to do it. So, because it's paid for. See, and you know, the concept it gets pretty hard for people to grasp because we're so used to getting money from a bank, or we get money from an employer when we're productive, and or the common, you know, thing you could hear on news would be, you know, well, the government is taxing productive people to pay for, you know, people on welfare or something. And you know, typical, you know, typical confusion is all they're doing. Where, you know, if you try to chase the argument around, you know, it's kind of like a dog chasing his tail. It's like it doesn't ever logically add up anything. But you know, and again, back to what I said originally, you know, you can't really try to explain what we have because it's just too convoluted. But when you just put it into context, like I just said about, you know, a nation state spending money on infrastructure, and then you have that as the platform to discuss anything further, then it starts to become a little more clear. You're like, because that truly, I think, is where, you know, this country is going to have to go, or in any country that wants to get rid of its problems of our society. I mean, we are not going to go anywhere until we get some debt-free money being spent into circulation. And because once this money is spent into circulation, it's there forever. I mean, you don't ever get rid of it. It would be, you know, you could do things like you could, you know, put right on the currency itself. You could put, you know, the project, like if it was, say, like if it was the Hoover Dam, you know, and back in the 30s when that was built, you know, and it paid those workers rather than the government borrowing money from a bank via this bonding scheme, you know, they just printed up currency that had the picture of the Hoover Dam on it and they paid those workers. You know, you could end up with one of those in your wallet today and it would still be valid. It would be valid for your taxes. So you could pay your taxes with it, the income tax. However, the income tax is going to be quite low because most of the infrastructure is paid for by just the government producing the currency. So, you know, your taxes are going to be quite low. It's going to be maybe a couple percent like they had originally in the Constitution. And, you know, in inflation-wise, the money does not inflate when it's created in that manner. This whole thing with inflation, you know, back five, 6 years ago when I just completely tuned out of politics, I was very afraid of inflation, and I thought it was that this government was producing all this money. They were printing all this money and then, you know, turning it around and handing it to poor people or something. Again, I'd never, you know, put two and two together. I mean, I would just listen to the mantra, what was in, you know, academia and on media and on the internet, for that matter, even back then. And, you know, I mean, they would try to just, you know, it was just fear-mongering, basically. But the inflation thing is real. It's true, Israel, not Israel. It is real. But what this person was able to explain to me, too, was that, you know, inflation is the cost of borrowing money. He's like, because he proved to me, you know, that with the actual documents, so forth and so on, that the government is actually borrowing money and they're paying interest on this money, and therefore all of the, and that's how the money is originated, basically. And then, you know, every time new money comes into the system, it has interest attached to it. Every single dollar, every single electronic dollar, every single cash dollar is able to prove this to me that, you know, it all has to do with interest being charged on this. And that's what inflation is. 100% of it is inflation is interest charges. And when you actually sorry, I'll shut up. I don't mean to talk too much here.
Well, I like what you had to say. I thought it was kind of interesting idea as far as spending on infrastructure. I had an idea about a year ago that if a nation was to completely get rid of, say, like a Federal Reserve type system and strictly go to a system where they create the money and they create the money that they spend every year on everything. You get rid of the income tax and you go strictly to an inflation-based system where I guess it would kind of parallel to Bitcoin in a certain regard. I guess the idea behind Bitcoin is that they use a computer process to mine the Bitcoin, and slowly that process, I guess, becomes more difficult or takes longer. So the more you create, the slower it starts to create Bitcoins. Now, in this case, it would just be the government saying, we're going to get rid of the Fed, we're going to get rid of the IRS, nobody pays any taxes, you only pay the tax that is inflation. It will instantly hit you no matter what. Now, this system obviously has never been done and would be extremely experimental, but I would like to see somebody test it out to see how it would go. And if eventually inflation or government spending would be tied to inflation, if government spending gets out of hand, we're going to rebel.
I think,
obvious.
I don't, You know, and I hear you, and that is one of the main questions whenever I run into this person. I used to ask him that a lot, but he's since convinced me. He's like, you know, there just won't be inflation. He's like, there's not going to be too much money. He's like, and he's very sincere in this, and he's up there in his years, and he's been doing this a long time. And, you know, he'll take 15 minutes to answer me on this, and he'll say, you know, look, you can't have too much money in the system. He's like, it will go into people's savings accounts. He's like, you know, he'll explain to me, like, you know, you could work half your life and save up money that you're going to need for the second half of your life, which is really what we should have in our society. And you know, you're going to need a lot of money, and you're going to have to save a lot of money. And, you know, so I do believe him now. I mean, at first I didn't. I was like, oh, man, yeah, the fear of inflation is still lingering with me. But it's been years now, and I you know, listen to him a lot, and I no longer hold that fear. I'm just, yeah, there cannot possibly be enough. And, you know, but part of my education, self-education here just on this, and I guess you call it research, but, you know, I started looking into a whole lot of things about the whole, I guess you'd call it productivity. I think you mentioned that on one of your things there, and you're talking about your show tonight. I mean, it actually does get down to, you know, valuing labor, you know, and I think it's difficult to quantify that and to put that into currency. And I think that might actually be, you know, if you go back 5,000 years, I mean, that, you know, they might have had a difficult time trying to figure that out, because, I mean, if you in fact are charging people too much for what you're doing, you're in essence, you're kind of starting down that road where you're contributing to the problem, because it does become, ultimately what it ends up becoming is people getting wealthy off of the exchange of money. And that's obviously where we've been here, you know, for thousands of years. And but you know, that literally it does actually start with people, you know, basically just charging too much for what they produced. And, you know, and that's a tricky thing. And I don't know, when I speak to my friend about this, he's more interested in just getting the state government to actually pay for roads and with currency that they create. And he's actually got a bill in the state. He's had it up there for years. I mean, literally like 15 years. And, you know, and so he doesn't get real deep into the political side. I mean, he's not gonna mention our buddies, you know, over there in the Middle East. I mean, he's not gonna go there, you know, because he wants this passed. And I think he's probably learned over the years that, you know, it's just when you're dealing within the political realm, you know, I mean, you really gotta be careful, because it just won't go anywhere. But it's, you know, point for us to discuss, you know, on Renegade Broadcasting. You know, we can say whatever the hell we want, and you know, I immediately think of that as how absolutely impossible it would ever be to get, you know, banks to give up their golden goose, where, you know, ultimately, too, Andrew, is, you know, you'd have to eliminate interest. You'd have to make interest illegal. And, you know, that, I mean, because there again, I mean, that was truly the point where Western society, you know, went wrong, was, you know, they were with the charging of interest. And, you know, I mean, it must have happened, you know, quite a long time ago, you know, but ultimately, in what we're talking about, well, at least what I'm trying to convey here, is that, you know, interest would have to be outlawed. You just couldn't have it. You'd have to have all state, or nation state, I'd rather use that phrase, because I think it can't just happen within like one of our states in our country. It'd have to be the entire country would have to. Mm-hmm. So it would have to be like a national currency that was used to pay for all of the infrastructure. And along with that, you'd also have to outlaw interest. You could not have anyone, and not even just banks. I mean, you couldn't charge your neighbor. You couldn't charge your brother interest. No one could be allowed to charge interest. Because that is actually what creates debt, is when loans are made, mm-hmm. The interest is never created, and that because it's been going on, and because we have debt, and then debt is actually a manipulation tool. Then that is what our Middle Eastern experts have figured out quite a long time ago, is that they use that that debt to their advantage to put all us goy into the into the palm of their hand where they need us, where they can direct pretty much whatever the hell they want with us. Outlawing interest.
You're exactly right on the whole interest thing. That's something that's really killing us right now. Those of us, I think, that are on, maybe the middle class, maybe some of us lower middle class, can't really get loans or business loans, even if we have a good business idea or pretty much know exactly how to do it. We just need the money.
Sure.
On Wall Street, mm-hmm. or if you're working with government contracts, I know such as affordable housing, low-income housing, income-based housing, Section 8, that they build the properties through USDA grants, USDA loans that are like 1% interest, and then they have other firms that put in the other 50%, and they're doing it maybe 2 or 3% interest, multi-million-dollar loans. And these companies that run these things, like, it's hilarious because they never spend a dime to build anything. They never spend any of their own money, and they think they're successful because they have, a multi-million-dollar company that really has never made any money. It's just kind of the illusion. They keep growing and growing. They scrape a little bit off the top of that loan to put into their business, but they haven't paid it. They haven't paid it back yet.
Well, sure. Big corporations, all they have to do, Andrew, is just float bonds. Big corporation, Ford Motor Company, does not need to make money. They can just produce these fake bonds, like I said earlier, with, they used to have to actually produce a piece of paper with some red ink on it, but they don't even do that now, with this, this illusionary device, they're able to get all of the purchasing power they need. And so there's absolutely zero way for anyone to compete. I think the point I was going to make was when you were mentioning, borrowing money, that actually might be a good thing that you don't qualify for that loan. Mm-hmm. There is one thing I've learned. I'm probably a little bit older than you, and I didn't understand this when I was younger. My dad just always said, don't borrow money. Don't ever pay interest.
Yeah.
And I didn't get it until, until he died. And I was finally, looking at all this stuff going, oh, damn it, this is what he was talking about. That's because that he probably knew, and I totally understand it now. Every time you borrow money, you're creating debt in the system, and it is going into those hands of those people that we're all well aware of here, and it is their mm-hmm. tool of manipulation. So I'm of the belief, don't borrow money, and I know that's probably ridiculous for a lot of people to say, well, you can't get ahead. But I will tell you, as someone who hasn't borrowed money my whole life, basically, I ever have not borrowed money, I'm just fine. It's fine. You end up not spending money on interest. and then that money mm-hmm. is actually available for you for other things. So it's a little tight, you know, at times. You know, your standard of living is less than everyone around you, but you're not in debt. And your mind is free. Your mind is free and clear. Actually, one of the guys who taught me a lot of this stuff, he's a little younger but than the original one, but, I mean, he had a horrible accident last year. He was the sole income earner in his family, wife, two kids, and it put him – he called me from the hospital. I mean, I ran down there immediately, and I have never seen anyone in such bad shape in my life. Every flipping bone was busted up, and but you know what? They didn't have a mortgage on the house they lived in. They were living in. And, you know, I didn't realize how bad the place was. I went out there to visit him one time after when he was in recovery, and I took him some food and for his family and everything. And you know, it wasn't a pretty home or anything, but. You know, because it was paid for, they didn't have the mortgage. It was a smaller town and rural area. The taxes were low. I mean, it wasn't like it tore this family up. Having the main income earner out of work for, gosh, it probably ended up being about 6 months or more, I think, before he actually could go back to work. But, you know, bottom line is, I mean, if you don't owe anyone money, you're not wasting money on interest. And I think it totally, for that particular family, I mean, I remember looking at his wife in the emergency room there, or not the emergency room, whatever, you know, the hospital. And, you know, she's like, you know, we'll be okay. You know, the house is paid for. And I'm like, wow. You know,
yeah.
That's incredible. You know, that doesn't happen. So, you know, yeah, if at all you can figure out how the hell to get a business plan going without borrowing, you know, I would highly recommend pursuing that before, you know, borrowing anything. But
I completely agree with you. Hey, we got another caller that's been waiting for a little while here. I'll leave you on the line. I'll pick them up, see if they have anything to say. 619, what's your name and where are you calling from?
Good tidings, Andrew. How are you?
Hey, how are you?
My name's Wayne. I'm from San Diego. I just want to say that it's never just a show. It's a victory for the voice of our people.
Okay. Is that all you have to say?
Well, I mean, I'm pretty askew in the gardens, and Victory Gardens seem to be back in, you know. It seems that now we're at war with the banks and inflation and corporation and greed, you know, but these are small things that we can do that don't even really take money, that you can really strike back at not only getting better health for your family and other people, but actually help yourself with money.
Mm-hmm. I'd have to agree with that.
If it happened in the 40s and people were able to do it, I don't understand why we're not able to do it now. I know you guys were talking about making different spirits. You know, the Abbey monks 1,000 years ago were doing this kind of stuff, and I've experienced things, everything from a dandelion wine to different beers and meads, like you were saying. And yes, it does take a little while to perfect it, but once you do, I mean, the rewards are tenfold.
Yeah, I think I think when you produce something for yourself, or at least I get a lot of satisfaction out of producing something for myself, other than you know, rather than going to a store and you know buying it, I have no idea where it comes from. I have no idea you know how the guy is or the people are that own the company. You know, where they stand on certain things, who they are, where they live, what they do, how they invest. So, you know, anything you can produce yourself, I say, you know, do it. If it makes sense, if it's economical, you know, if you're living in an apartment, of course you can't really farm. I mean, I guess if you were amazing at it, maybe you could do something, but it's probably not the best thing for you. I think we have to assess our own situations And one of the best questions to ask is, you know, what do I use? What do I consume? You know, and how can I create that for myself? And if I can create it for myself, can I create it for other people? You know, as a part-time gig, something to do on the side. You know, I know some people, they make cakes, you know, for people's birthdays. Some people knit. Some people garden or farm. There's endless things that we can do to make ourselves more self-sufficient. And pretty much anything go ahead.
I think that the family farms are the battle line where we're fighting at now, you know. The problem, reaction, solutions to a lot of what we have. Farmers markets today enable those people to go and sell and speak out with the people. And it's like a market that is highly craved and growing. And if you're genuine and you go out there and you sell these products, I think that it could be quite not only lucrative, because I'm not looking at it for the money thing, but for the sustainability of those people and the bettering the people around you. I mean, we're buying products, like it's been said before on this show, from anywhere from China. I live in California, and they sell avocados here from Chile, and they're the shittiest avocados you could ever buy. They have veins and pieces in them that are just jack shit. Not only that, but you don't know what kind of chemicals and pesticides have been sprayed on them. So when you meet somebody at a farmer's market who's physically grown them and seen them and call you out and give you their address to come to their house or to their farm where you could pick from, I mean, that's the ultimate, like, putting the bread where the butter is, you know?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Definitely. It's like today I went to the grocery store and I'm looking at all these different organic, you know, produce. And you know, I pick up a bag of Brussels sprouts and look at the tag, and they're from Mexico. You know, you got peppers from Mexico, beans from Mexico. Like, almost all the organic stuff I see in the, you know, actual grocery stores is not from anywhere near here. I've even seen tomatoes and, like, peppers from Israel. And I'm like,
well,
how do they even have
time? What kind of legislative laws do you think that they have for coding those property or those items? I know if you look at any kind of vegetable or fruit in a market, from your Whole Foods to your Sprouts to your Henry's to whatever, they tend to come with a 4, an 8, or a 9, which a 4 has a chemical dependency on it. A 9 is supposedly organic, which is only 70-something percent organic, and an 8, which is genetically modified. But how many people tell you that or where that comes from? Or how many people put that out there? But if you will look, you will see that the 9 is advertised as organic.
Yeah. I'm hearing somebody type. I think that might be Gitz there. Oh. Let me see if I can mute him. Okay, I muted you, Gitz. I'm going to go to a break in a little bit here. I'll bring you up after that break. But go ahead with what you were saying there, caller.
I was just talking about the food labeling with 4s, 8s, and 9s and how that it works as far as what we know or what we're being told. I think that one of the best solutions when you ask for solutions to this is an internal food embargo in which we make the food here from this country, because why is we as the United States, being a breadbasket, are creating food or buying food from other countries who we do not trust their labeling system? I mean, China has been a culprit of many things that have proved to be harmful because they've bought off, sold whatever in their things. Not that our FDA is much better, but of course it would have to be better than that. Not only that, but it would create revenue and jobs and self-dependency for people. I don't understand.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much anything can be grown somewhere within the boundaries of the United States, and that's ruling out, like, any type of greenhouse or, you know, outside ways of, or unorthodox ways of growing. You know, we have so many different zones here and climates that anything can be grown. Why it's being grown elsewhere makes no sense. You know, we don't even need the amount of land that we're currently using. We don't need all this huge equipment that sits for, you know, 9-10 months out of a year that some farmer paid $500,000 for, you know, just to use a few times.
well, they're also forced to put in pesticides and react to different grants and stuff that they will get to do that. I mean, I saw something, and granted it's on YouTube, but a guy, it was on a mainstream media, I think it was CBS in L.A., who was growing in his backyard not only enough food to subsidize his whole family of eight people, but he was subsidizing it by selling it to organic bistros and made quite a lucrative living off of it. And I don't understand why it's like we're not taking the initiative, the ball's in our court, that we sit back and put our hands in our pocket and complain, whereas we could take action. I mean, I've been to a fucking 99-cent store here selling topsy-turvies that grow tomatoes upside down, and I've produced enough tomatoes throughout the year that I can what I don't eat, and it costs me nothing. Mm-hmm. It costs me, like, maybe $5 to make tomatoes for a year, and I make tomatoes quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of ways to at least supplement your food source. Like with the situation we're in right now, we're not producing, you know, all of our own food. Currently, we don't have a whole lot of really anything growing. The season's taken a little while to get started here. We've had the cold fronts that keep coming in that have kind of hampered us from put these around or plants in the ground. But yeah, I have never tried the topsy-turvies. They work pretty well.
They did for me for the price. They were 99 cents, which was on the store or on the internet or whatever they were. I don't watch TV. I haven't watched TV for 20, 30 years. So I used them for 99 cents, and they seem to work pretty well. And my thing is you can put a bigger hurt to these people that are trying to control and manipulate us through what they want us to eat and what chemicals they want to put on it. Through just the power of being able to grow your own food is a liberating experience. And then when you cut down the price that you're paying, because anybody who doesn't go to the grocery store and see food rising on a regular occasion now, almost like the level of what gas is, not in tune to what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to take a break here. I'm going to play a song. But first, I want to give that number again, the call-in number. It's 347-633-9657, 347-633-9657. Like I said before, you can also go to the show page at blogtalk.com/renegadebroadcasting, and you can Skype in. There's a button to Skype in through there. So we're going to go to a break and come back. Maybe we'll have some more callers. But we'll see you on the other side.
Yeah.
Welcome back. I'm your host tonight, Andrew. I've had some callers so far talking about, you know, the Federal Reserve System and, blood of everything, financial systems, the economy, food. There was one thing I saw today. Says a headline, real inflation fear. U.S. food prices are up 19% in 2014. So the inflation of food has gone up 19% in the past year. That's not a good sign. And I can attest to that, at least through buying groceries, that the prices go up and up and up and up. But my paychecks don't really seem to go up. Nobody else I know's paycheck has really gone up in the past 4 years that we've been experiencing this ridiculous amount of price inflation, except for, you know, your iPad. Well, I guess your iPads and your iPods still are pretty expensive, but it seems like the technology crap that we don't, for the most part, don't really need has been what's stayed at a stable or has progressively gotten cheaper. I was actually looking at prices on like camcorders and things like that. And, you know, they have these like HD 1080p camcorders now. And there's like some of them that are like $200, $300. And I remember like when I bought a camcorder probably close to 10 years ago, I think we paid like $250 for a really low-end model, like I think it was called a mini SD or something like that. It was tapes, and the tapes were really expensive, and the video quality was terrible, and the LCD screen on the camera broke for like no reason within the first couple months. So, I mean, now you can get something that's practically a million times better, full HD, for the same or less than what I paid 10 years ago for a piece of crap. Kind of interesting the way that technology has gotten cheaper, has stayed the same price, even though it's gotten better and better. More storage, more speed. It's a good thing in some regards, but I think the ability to retrieve things instantly and to do what we do, like on the internet, instantly kind of affects our brain to where we expect everything to be that way. We expect real life to be that way. I think that would explain things in the economy the way they are. People that, you know, sometimes expect to, you know, be making $100,000 as soon as they get out of college and things like that. It's just unrealistic. But it would be nice to see, you know, a lot of us end up in a steady financial progression to where we're actually able to buy our own homes and, you know, run our own businesses and things like that. I'm not really seeing a whole lot of that within my area. People that are slowly working themselves up, just seems like a lot of people are just kind of stuck at the same level. It's unfortunate. Let's see if we got any callers here. We still have Wayne on the line. Let's pick him back up to see if he has anything to say. Wayne, you're back on.
Andrew, I'm pretty much just listening. I mean, everything that you say is pretty much just factual about the economy running a flat line. But I think we all know that this is done by design in our race to the bottom, or making us more acceptant of the way things are and losing our ability to have self-sustainability, I guess is what I'm looking at.
Yeah.
I agree with you on that. The farms are a big key to that, because and it's happened in Latin America and other places too, other countries. They've destroyed the farms there because it's a system at the worldwide government that wants to destroy self-sustainability to where you have this dependency. to where everything has pushed you into this multi-conglomerate city to tax, to do every fiber of your being to where you have no independence, to where you have no self-reliance, to where you have no pride, to where you just go along, get along with the system. We all know that. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I say I think we need to somehow figure out how we can start working with our local communities as much as possible to where we don't have to rely on all of these other things, you know. We don't have to rely on the government. I don't think really any of us rely on the government for much of anything. I personally don't, never have. Wouldn't feel too bad if I had to at this point, considering.
We need to return upon a codependency with us and nature, with farmers, with an interaction with them to where we thrive and survive. Every area, mm-hmm. is what's been said before, should be able to be. There's no reason why the United States cannot grow its own food. Why are we taking outside food sources? But that's just a huge dagger in our side to just kill our independence. I mean, there's no reason for it. And if we're not taking action, even at a local level, and I know you say that a lot of people are living in cities and small areas where they don't have that, but you could be doing raised beds. You could be doing it at a small level. Anything like a zucchini, that will grow anywhere. And that could subside a huge amount of your food, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And like what I said earlier in the show, that I'm starting kind of like a small worm, you know, like a worm farm, and was reading, you know, all this stuff, trying to, you know, try to get it planned out. And I'm finding that the worms themselves actually break down, or you should expect them to break down at least half of their body weight in ideal conditions, and that they can actually break down up to their body weight and even above their body weight under really ideal conditions. And so, you know, when you figure you've got, I'm starting off with 2 pounds of worms, so that's like 2 pounds of food waste a day that I need to be feeding them. And then you get into people that have operations like 12 million worms. You're talking a lot of food that you have to feed those things to keep them alive and keep them reproducing and producing castings. So I was like, you know, I need to grow some squash this year, just dig a hole and get it prepped and everything, and grow a bunch of like large produce like squash to just feed the things, because I don't know if I'm gonna be able to keep producing enough food waste naturally just for them. So you know, that's another thing.
Your other vegetables will grow in almost anything, sir. I mean, you can look on the mm-hmm. side of the freeway in Los Angeles, where they layer 4, 6, 8 feet deep of concrete and asphalt, and what sprouts up through the cracks, Mother Nature. We mm-hmm. no matter how much they try to deplete the soil, if you're tentative to it and you mind it, it will grow. We have to take the effort. We can't sit there and be plugged into this electronic box that they say and do this, or throw your hands up in defeat, because the first action to anything is getting started. You know, the trip starts with the first step, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we gotta get to doing something. That's kind of been my thing recently. Is like, I spent a lot of time trying to figure out which directions I need to go. But you know, if you wait too long, opportunities close up, paths get grown over, so to speak, to where it's going to take a lot more work to try to do it, you know, in the future once you waited too long.
I believe that defeat in the mind is absolute. But if you try and try, like someone on this network once said before, slaves wait to be freed. Free men free themselves. And if we continue to fight, mm-hmm. even if you're smited down and you get up and fight again, then you're a free man until you die.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we fall into the trap sometimes of, we get down and we're like, you know, the Jews control everything. You know, they control the banks. They control this and that. Well, they really don't control they don't control nearly as much, I think, as they think they control. It's mostly a mental control that they have over us. And that's not to say that that isn't real or anything, or that it can just be, you know, mind over matter overnight and everybody will wake up. I don't think it's going to be that easy, but I think we need to stop giving them so much power. I don't think they're nearly as powerful as they really think they are, or that we think they are. It just takes us doing some work, actually.
I would say they control a banking and a legal system in our society, but the indomitable spirit of man and your will to succeed has gone on for hundreds of thousands of years to push you to get here where you're at. And they are not able to smite that down because they can't just push a button because you're still on the radio. So I would definitely say that if you do not accept failure and you rise up again to the challenge again and again, then you may fail, but you will have to get up again and try again. And when you continue to try again, that makes the indomitable spirit of man and, in essence, of our people.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. You know, we gotta try not to get beaten down too much. I know I've had my fair share of it from, I guess you could say, this awakening. You know, from time to time, kind of hits you. You're like, man, we are screwed. And, you know, I think we are screwed.
Never that. I can remember being 5, 6 years old, laying awake at night at my grandmother's house with her book of Funkin' Wagnalls and going through it. And she would wake up and see me laying in a pile of books with Norse mythology, with the history of our ancestors, laying there with 8, 10, 12 books. And I never accepted that and never will.
Well, that's good. That's good. I look at
we,
it
we
as
cannot, we cannot accept defeat, Andrew. We can accept a loss in a battle, but the battle's not over because you still breathe and I breathe and we strive to make a better future for yourself, for your children, for the future of our people. And that's where the war's at. They can win every battle. They can block you out. They can blockade you. They can make all these taxes on you. They can do all these things to you. They don't win the war because we don't surrender. That's why they don't win the war.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we can't give up. I mean, there's really no point in giving up if what a lot of us believe is really true. You know, if we're defeated, we still fight because we're not going to have anything else left to live for. If they really get what they are hoping to achieve. And, you know, I see that as white genocide, whether it be through just completely mixing the populations until we're gone, or if there will actually be a war fought through that. Only time will tell where that's going to end up going, but we have, I think, a good idea of what it is now and where it's really headed, and it's nowhere good. But I think that our people are starting to wake up to the fact that we're becoming very quickly second-class citizens, second-class Americans, and that we are not in America. We as white people are not allowed to disagree with a person of color. We are not allowed to do that. Anytime you disagree with a person of color, you are wrong, no matter how right you are, how ridiculous that person is. You know, we are considered wrong.
I won't disagree with you in the fact of everything that you're saying, but I'm not worried about the class of the people are. I'm worried about the caliber of the people that we are. If we as a people have the caliber to rise ourselves above, we have risen above before. I mean, Odin had said, let me paraphrase, that he had the two birds on his shoulder. One was the bird of knowledge, and it would tell him all the things he needed to know. And he cherished that bird, but he also had the bird that was a family of blood, and that one he cherished most of all. And if you know that and you continue on that path, I don't care what class, what kind of car, what kind of things you have, it will be your creed that carries you through that will make this people survive. It really will.
Yeah. Hey, we have another caller here. I'm going to leave you on. I'm going to bring them up, see if they have anything to say. 618, what's your name and where are you calling from?
It's Buddy and Krieger, just calling from Illinois. I was listening to some of the show earlier, but then I missed some of it because I had the phone off. But yeah, I seen you where you're talking about like diet economics and like self-sustaining and stuff like that.
Yes.
Oh yeah. Well, I heard a guy was telling me, he was talking about Hugin and Munin, and like that kind of spitting me is it like you know you have the intellect of the mind, but I mean Odin, he said he sent Munin out, or the one that represented memory, he'd send him out, you know, and without that, if that one didn't come back, then the mind was worthless. So I think if we look to the past, you know, we can see how things have happened before and repeated, but as far as it's going now, I mean, it's like, well, are we facing all the minorities and everything, you know, trying to get over on us and stuff in the name of equality? We've also got the Zog against us too, you know, the government. So, I mean, we're dealing with them plus the government on top of it. So, I mean, it's like we could be as positive as possible or, you know, just as strong as we are, but we're facing like a government plus, you know, all these other people trying to hate on us in the name of equality and everything. So, I mean, it's like, I don't know. Like, it's like Nietzsche was all talking about. And noble without regard to all that. I mean, yeah, you could be noble, not have any regard to all that, but we're still dealing with both of them, you know. So I just don't know how much that helps at the same time.
Yeah, and I think the funny thing.
I can't hear you. I think you might be breaking up or something on your end. I don't know if you can hear mine.
Krieger.
Oh, I can hear you again now.
Are you there? William Krieger.
Oh, yeah, I'm still here. I can hear you now. I wasn't able to hear you.
I'm another caller as well. I commend you for the work that you've done, sir.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
I would say this to you, that if the odds are so impossible and that the cards are so stacked against us, how are we here today? Because we had inquisitions, we had killings of fucking herald of our people, and yet we still exist today. There's a fire, there's something inside of us that doesn't let us die that easy. So we have to rise up to the challenge.
Yeah. I mean, we flipped north, but it seems like they're following us to the north now. So, I mean, it's like where do we regroup together our forces and then come back out? And you know, I don't know.
They can follow you wherever you go across this world. The one place they haven't been able to destroy is your heart and your mind, sir. And you know that because they've challenged you. They've dissuaded you. They've said you were evil for posting things, doing things, for having marches, for things like that, and yet you still did them. Why is that, Krieger?
I mean, well, I know I could face, like, being murdered or killed for standing up for the culture and the people, but, I mean, I'd rather go out as a nine-harrier. So, yeah, I know what you're saying. I mean, as long as you go out without fear, that's all that really matters,
so,
you know?
So they couldn't stamp you out no matter what the odds were, no matter how many there were, no matter what they did to you. And that's why you exist, and that's why you're true nobility.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I'd rather people just go out like that, you know, rather than just submit. I mean, I don't know if any people have faced it like this, you know, being persecuted by a government on top of a bunch of people that aren't noble.
They have, my brother. I heard Frank call the other day talking about he had been stabbed. I've been stabbed. I've been clubbed. I've had this stuff happen too. But we have to take a high ground and not to the point where we surrender and be succumbed by all of this, but to stand up in a fashionable way where we don't make a retreat, but make a solution for the future of our people where we can continue this. And it's hard. It's not an easy route.
I think ultimately they'll destroy themselves anyways, because I heard a guy talk from England. He was saying once the countries get so flooded with these non-productive, horrible people, then the countries are just doomed to fall apart anyways. And, like, what are they going to do then, you know? Then it'll just be natural law.
That's the history of what we've seen in society and all things. But it all points there had to be mass leaving or reforming of somewhere else to go to have this parasitic view to be able to have this happen to us. And what we have to keep in mind is that we have to be mentally strong above that. We can't get into smaller. I'm not saying you don't defend yourself or your family when people confront you on levels that you have, I have, other people have. I'm not going to get into those details. But you have to take a higher ground to be an Aryan. And I don't want to sound like Jim or other people like that, but there's ways that you lead, you know. They look to lead by example, men do. Not by laws or credos or things like that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, man. Yeah, I know what you're saying. Like, the system, all the laws are just, you know, it's to defend the rulers and the people that are in power. The laws don't even apply to the general population.
Do I have you as the wrong guy? Are you not the young man that organized the march in Illinois? Am I wrong?
Oh, yeah, it is in Illinois. Yeah. Yeah, in Illinois.
Yeah,
you've
got incredible balls and fortitude, my friend. Let me tell you that. You have my... you have my acclamations. You have many a thing, sir. So don't think you ever did anything wrong. You're pushing the issue further and further than I could at this time. I mean, Keith and Rishi could verify reasons why I couldn't do that at this time. But let me tell you, we have to keep putting our presence out there. But it's the image that we put out that is our presence that will make it legitimate or not, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, even if you listen to it.
You didn't get into it with him when you posted something on the wall where you didn't start saying slanderous, you know, racial things where when you try to put past the message of what was happening to our people, you put it past the message of what was happening to our people, which was factual, and went to the heart of the matter, and people would denigrate it by using alternate subjects, you know? That's what they do.
Yeah, they always preach humanity, but, I mean, they don't have any place in the world for white people, and they want to see us extinct. But, you know, at the same time, they're preaching all this humanity and everything, and we don't get any brotherhood or love, so.
There was no deniability in the message you said, only attacking you for, you know, the counterpoint of what they've been taught to attack you by, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't see how they can deny that diversity is equal and white genocide. It doesn't make any sense. No one can see that, or... It's almost like they don't care. They don't care about white people, or they don't care if they're facing extinction or something. Yeah.
Well, I think that it's not that they don't care about us. They dramatically do care about us, but they care about us being a thorn in their side or a roadblock to their ultimate goal of just subjugating all people.
Yeah.
We are the few that stand up in the ranks of the many and have stood and fallen before for our beliefs, and that's pretty rare. I mean, it seems like it wouldn't be. You see all these Hollywood movies and things, but it's rare for people to do self-sacrifice for other than their self-needs or gratification.
Yeah, darn good. I mean, I think a lot of people are in the mindset that materialism is like, it's starting from like an economic stance on everything, you know, and they think that like, well, if you can make everything right on a material level, then everything else is going to be right or something, but I don't really see it that way, you know. I believe in idolism.
Well, why do you think that so many of our people that are the best and brightest that they recruit and they put them in this higher echelon or semi-high echelon to where they're living a little bit better than us, but yet they're controlled, they're economically controlled. The military, you're economically controlled in there. I personally think that they put people in the military and then they give them stuff to make them have babies more because it's an easier way to control them. You know, and I'm not taking away from anything that somebody does in the military because that's a noble purpose, but I think that they have means to justify all that.
Yeah. I don't. Mm. I admire people that are willing to fight and die, but I don't see how anybody can fight from the capitalist class and the Jews, you know. Plus, they get exposed to the plea hearing and all that other stuff, you know. It's like they don't even know what they're getting themselves into.
I would honestly 100% agree that people in the military are being used, but I don't think that they think that way. I think that they've been born and bred and wrapped under this flag to thinking that they're doing the right thing or told this. And if they're plugged into this electronic TV and these things, media feeding them this, then of course we're not going to see any real altruistic views of humanity or society. And we're just going to go bomb, make a glass and parking lot, do whatever we have to do to other nations to appease that, and then we'll feel good at the end of the day for whatever ribbon, token, whatever we get.
I don't know why they do it. I mean, it seems like if they keep other nations down, you know, that just makes it to where workers here won't get any respect, because if they can go exploit people further in another place, then, like, why would the profiting class here respect us, you know? If they can keep these other people down, then they don't have to treat us with respect then, you know? So, I don't know.
Well, we're not the profiting class here any longer. We're just part of the Goy plantation, and we're out here wondering, and as you see inflation go up and everything happening, it's only a matter of time before they pick a new host and they let ours die.
Yeah, like a new management team, or
yeah, I think I got cut off a little while ago. I was pointing back to Martin Luther King's speech and talking about being judged by the content of a person's character instead of the color of their skin. And if that were actually the case today in America, that would be better than what we currently have, because we have a system that is judging us by the color of our skin, with the idea of white privilege. They're saying overall they're putting out this image of all blacks get a free pass because they've been through a lot of shit, and all white people are completely under scrutiny. They've never worked a day in their life. They didn't build the country. They're garbage. They're a bunch of racists, and they need to be kicked down, all the way to the bottom, because they're, worthless in their minds. That's kind of how they see it. So it would actually, if Martin Luther King's Jr.'s words were actually true in this country right now, it would actually be a better thing than what we currently have. And that's what's really sad. I just want to point out the kind of the ridiculousness of that, the whole equality, because we don't have it. We don't even have it. It's not even true.
Nah. All I know is, like, people on the left, they'll try to say that we used, like, immigrants and all that to build the country, therefore it's not ours and all this other crap. Like, they try to say that pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah, and all the other argument I've heard all the time is that, we have to let these immigrants in because they do jobs that Americans, and when they say Americans, they pretty much mean white Americans, white Americans won't do. And to that I say, you're dead wrong. You don't know what you're talking about. I know plenty of white Americans that used to do these jobs until you let these illegals come in and the immigrants come in that went from making 20 cents an hour in Mexico living in a shack to living in a rural, house out in the country with like 15 people living in it. And they're like, well, we have running water. At least that's a step up, It doesn't take much to make people that come from shit happy with, $5 an hour or whatever.
Yeah. So I use them to bring wages.
That's a false argument.
Okay. See, that was like the case of Rome. Like, I know the Romans would use the Germans as, like, foreign labor and all that, or they would try to make them fight and pits as gladiators and all that when they capture them. As soon as that fell, then they rushed in, and they took all the gold and everything, southern France and all that. So.
I
will say, gentlemen.
Yeah, go ahead.
I will say this, that I have lived in Mexico, and the minimum wage when I lived there was $5 a day. So it's obvious why they would come here for $7 an hour. And when we play it, and I'm not taking the side of the Mexican, believe me, but when we play it like that, we're playing a left-right paradigm that's controlled in the middle, this controlled opposition, that it's hard for us to find a center because we want to attack them, which rightfully so, they're hurting us. But the true mastermind behind it, we know who that is and what they're doing. And I mean, I've seen those conditions, seen what they're doing, and it's atrocious for them, and it's played off for us. And instead of expending our energies on the true enemy, we're given a pressure valve release on these people. These same wars are being fought down there, funded by multi-corporations that are pushing those people out of there, and then they take their old farming lands and make them into resorts and push people up here, push the wages down, have corporations working at a lower and lower wage. A guy used to be a truck driver or a painter, and had a whole family that he could support and live with, and now can't. And we are given a pressure release valve of these invading Latinos coming here, like, and I'm not to say they don't bring a shitload of problems and other things, but we're missing the eye of the beast that controls the game.
Yeah, hey guys, I think Boyan's trying to call in here. I think he's trying to call in through Skype. He just added him. I'm not sure if he's on yet. Boyan, whenever you come in, just let us know you're here. I'll let you say what you want to say. As far as the Mexico issue, my view on it is that the same people that voted for free trade and the same people that vote for more immigration and laxening immigration laws, those people are voting for the same for both of those things, which is hurting, free trade hurts people in Mexico and also hurts us as well because it takes away jobs here, ships them over there, and they don't pay them, obviously, what they really should. And that's why my view on Mexico as far as a solution is to, in a ideal situation, would be for the U.S. government to put pressure on Mexico to get rid of all these Jews in their government that are controlling everything, to get rid of people like Carlos Slim, which runs the telecoms down there and also is behind the phone company that does the Obama phones. And he makes, personally, I think somebody calculated it up, that he makes $10, like in his own pocket, gets $10 for every Obama phone. People like that need to be outed instead of being propped up by our government. And I see the biggest problem for me is I'm sick of people with that look white, whether they're really white or not, doing things and then people blaming them for screwing up the world and blaming white people as a whole when I don't like what those white-ish or white-looking people are doing either in our government.
Well, I think there's a certain amount of naivete to think that your voting bloc actually matters. Like it's been said before that Stalin didn't care how the people voted, it's who counted the votes. So he'll never really realize what the white majority or any of the people in America are already voting on these issues. These issues are being pushed through by corporations, whether you like it or not, because it's their bottom dollar.
Yeah.
That's kind of where I go.
Do we have Boy on here yet? I don't know. Maybe he decided not to call in here. I'm not sure what the issue is, but yeah, that's my take on it. I don't like being just through the type of group, I guess you could say, that we're in, or white nationalist or something of that affiliation. We're accused of wanting to put, blacks and Mexicans into slavery, and I don't, personally, I don't want that. I guess maybe some people do. I haven't heard anybody that's really advocating that. But I don't want to deal with the trouble of it. I've worked with these people before. I would much rather work with white people and boss around white people if I'm a boss than, Mexicans and blacks. I think the racial element just makes it unproductive. And China, when you look at what China's doing as far as their industry, they work a whole lot better as a homogenous society than a multicultural society here does.
I mean, were to organize, all the foreign labor in this country, against capitalism and everything, do you think that would make any difference in the long run, or do you think, what do you think would happen? It's kind of hard to say, national socialism to every people when they're, bringing all these foreign people into here. I mean, you can't expect them to have kind of loyalty to this place so they're not even, they don't identify with it at all, you know what I'm saying? Not the land or nothing, so...
That's the real trouble that we're in now. As far as the demographics that I'm seeing is that we have around 16% of the population that's black. which I think that's actually probably closer to 20% due to it being based on census numbers and the fact that a lot of these blacks, and I've heard this from people in the census, that they never can get anybody to the door, so they aren't put down. They aren't being listed. Also, they're saying that whites are somewhere around 60% of the population. I think that's lower because you have different Hispanics, as they want to call them, being considered white. So the true numbers, I think, are closer to like 50% white, 20% black, probably 25% Mexican to 30%, and kind of everybody else in between there. And that's the reality of what we're living in. And that makes it really difficult to do anything as far as, like, white people have this, you know, these people have that. At this point, it's, like, really hard to see it. And that's why I advocate for ethnostates within the United States. I do not advocate for an all-white United States. Others, I can understand the reasoning behind that. And I would like to get your take on what you think about, you know, ethnostates, or what the solution is for the United States, or what do you think is the most viable solution with what we're looking at dealing with right now?
I know that before the Civil War, you know, there was a lot of room for experimentation as far as all that need, the state sovereignty actually meant something, you know. So back then, you know, I could see, like, a certain racial group might want to go to this area or that state, and that would work out. But now it's like after the Civil War, it just seems like the federal government got such a grip on everything, they don't allow any room to do things differently, you know, as far as that goes in other states and things, you know. But I mean, if America is based on Anglo-Saxon law and Anglo-Saxon language, then, you know, essentially it's a white nation, so maybe it would be good just to deport everyone back to their original homelands, you know, because I don't know. And then you got the Indians. They make the argument that it's the Indians, but I mean, you got the red-haired bog mummies, and then, you know, the Indians have their own mythologies talking about killing red-haired giants and driving them into caves and everything. So who's to say they didn't take this land from some kind of white people, you know? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I understand the sentiments of the Native Americans, if you can call them that. I've looked into what the appropriate term for them, it's kind of confusing even in their regard. I use the term Native American because it seems to be fairly the most accurate, which we do know that there's European genetics mixed in with that. There's even Asiatic genetics mixed in with some of these Native American tribes. So even they themselves are not really from this land as far as we can tell. I think there's a place here. Short-term wise, I think there's a place here for everyone. Future wise, could it be something different than that? Very much so. I think that to be the case. But ultimately, I would like to see us separate into individual states, and I would absolutely love to see Marxist states, because I want to watch them crumble and fall when they do not have the other end of the spectrum propping them up, like we do in America. You have the Republican Party, which is your lower-class whites that are actually producing the products that upper-class whites and Jews are selling, and then you have the Democrat Party, which is some upper-class whites and Jews doing the same thing, selling a product, and then you have lower-class non-whites that for the most part are not producing as much as the other side. They're taking a lot more. And I'm seeing this through tax returns and tax refunds that some of these non-whites are getting for having, you know, 4, 5, 6 kids. They're getting back, you know, $10,000, $20,000 a year when they either don't work or they work part-time. And it's like, you know, they're getting back practically what they made in a year. That doesn't work in a long run scenario. Can't just keep taking and taking and having another side pay and pay.
She's saying, like, through them having a bunch of kids, like, they could make over $30,000 a year just getting a return on those kids somehow, or?
Yeah, there's different methods, and I wonder how much of it's fraud, but I've gone off some cases of people that have actually just outright told me that were non-white what they got back, and I was like, holy shit, because I'm not getting that back, and I don't know anybody white that is. I'm not sure exactly what they're getting money back for or how they're doing it, but they're doing it some way. And like I said, there could be a lot of fraud in that we aren't aware of.
I like the Democrats where they were trying to say that unless you make like $60,000 a year or something, you're not putting any money into the government anyways or something like that. They're trying to make some kind of argument like that. It was either them. It might have been the Republicans. I'm sure it's that. So I don't know.
I really like it. Now I view the Republican Party as being the corral or the white plantation. Obviously both parties are completely fake, full of shit. But the Republican side is really the corral for white people. And I think the Tea Party is really the corral for working class or actual producers. Are more in the Tea Party because, you know, they do want some real change. A lot of these Tea Party people, but they're falling for another deception. It's a shame. But yeah, I'm hearing some background noise there. I'm not sure what's going on here. Okay.
I'm sorry, that was probably me adjusting my speakers.
Okay, yeah, I wasn't sure if we lost you there or not.
No, I was just going to say when you talk about organizing labor, it's just a political spearhead for these corporations that allow you to organize, make a pyramid structure, and then they steal from the top the voice. And this is how they do it, and it's the same people doing that. So when you're talking about organizing any kind of labor or doing that, that method is not applicable in today's society.
Do you think it could be done like autonomously? Like they talk about burrowing from within. Like if the labor doesn't act with the people,
I don't think so, because there's a corporate structure, laws, rules, and bylines that you have to abide by. And once you get outside of them, they're always looking at those parameters to fire you. And when you step outside of that, you're outside of their guidelines for that. And they have control to either knock you back in place or knock you down.
Well, I mean, like radical labor back in the 20s, they refused to go into labor contracts because they knew that meant that they couldn't act in any kind of way. Like, couldn't they go old school again and just be like, screw contracts, you know?
I'm sorry, when was that? What age and period?
Well, back in like, you know, when the unions first started, you know, they were more autonomous. Like, back then, they would refuse to get into labor contracts, you know, because they knew that meant, oh, well, we can't act.
These unions you speak of are before World War II and after the effects of what has happened to this country. It's much like the education centers, the legal centers. I mean, think about it.
So, I mean, like back then, like they had free speech battles. Like you'd have a guy stand up on a soapbox and people would recite the First Amendment, get drug out the jail, and the next guy would do it, and they would do it until the jails were so full. They just had to let all the workers go, you know.
Like we had free speech riots here in San Diego where we tarred and fucking feathered people in the early 1900s and ran them out of town. Do you think that's going to stand nowadays? Come on.
I'm just saying, like, it's got too political. No, maybe if the workers would start to act for themselves more, you know, instead of thinking there's some harmony between, like, labor leadership and capital or something, you know.
What workers? The black with the white with the Hispanic with the multicultural platform that we work under that undercuts you to want to get his brother for a job to get whatever they can for the most of what the individual can and sever the whole of society? We're not the workers of society anymore.
So you don't think there's not even enough of us to consider that?
I never think the battle's over with. I never think that. I'm not telling you that. I'm telling you that the corporate structure and the way they've designed it and the rules that they have put in place, the procedures that they do against me and you, we have to think outside of the box and come up with other means that allow us to rise ourselves up or our family or our people.
I just wonder, like, if all
the foreign labor, if it were to become organized, would they be forced to respect all workers here? Or, like, would it just, that just never happen and they'll just bring it down to the level it was in their original country, you know? Like,
I think that foreign labor is unified, and it has a goal of bringing more foreign labor over here to change in the country. When I go around here and they're trying to teach me Spanish and I'm in America and telling me that I'm not telling them it in Spanish here in California, that I think the plan's pretty obvious.
Yeah. I just wonder, before, like, you look at countries like China, like, they can keep wages down over there, you know, and it makes it to where, like, they don't have to pay us over here higher wages to produce certain things, you know. But I mean, say the labor were to become organized in China, then they couldn't just go over there and get stuff real cheap, you know. They'd be forced to go back to countries like this, you know. So, like, I've wondered how that is a solution to organize.
It's a 30-minute fucking ride from my house to the border, and I can tell you, right across the border in these Chinese cities in San Diego, we have the Mattel, we have the Samsung, the Sony Corporation, and these giant 15, 20, 30 stories buildings. And I can tell you, living across the border, and I have lived there with the people that attacked Kyle Hunt, and seeing them pull up on school buses and people run up through canyons and run them in a fucking school bus in a factory and work them 12, 14, 16 hours a day for whatever kind of wages that they're going to pay them, I don't think your organization is going to do anything to the structure that they've already created.
No, you're saying, like, they'll get their hands chopped off or something, like, yeah. I know it's like that over there. I mean, I don't know. I just wonder if there's any way that, like, they could organize over there, you know, because that's why they've got us by the balls, because they can just, like, threaten to kill them if they don't work for those hours or wages, you know. So, I mean, it fucks us too, you know. That's one way they keep us under control, is by having those people live, like,
William, they're playing us against them to control the middle. They're putting them here to make us have them as our enemies, when our real enemies control the strings much higher and make much more lucrative profits than $8, $10, $12 an hour.
Yes.
It's not that I agree and I'm crying to the plight of those people, but they're used as a fucking battlefield, an enemy combatant for us to fight when we're deflected from what the real truth is.
So if they organize the foreign labor here in America, would that overthrow the capitalists and the Jews then? Like,
no, it strengthens them. It strengthens them. It runs the labor cheaper and cheaper and runs us down. Anyone who had a voice, the people who had a voice who they couldn't kill in the Crusades, who they couldn't make pagans change over to their Christianity, it strengthens them because we were one of the last bastions, one of the last voices. You go to fucking Germany, I had a girlfriend there, and I'll tell you about free speech laws there. You say anything there, you flip anyone off, they're pulling you in front of a court. They're arresting you. Mm-hmm. They're doing stuff to you that you won't see here. We haven't seen it yet here. That doesn't mean it's not coming.
Oh, they just call disorderly conduct here. Anytime you say something I don't want to hear, they just call disorderly conduct, you know, and then they arrest you. They do.
Hey, guys, we've got about 3 minutes left in the live stream. I just want to put it out there, put out the number again. 347-633-9657. Call in within the next 3 minutes, and you can be pulled over into the archives. And the number again, 347-633-9657. But
Andrew, I didn't mean to take up your time. And William, this guy is a great guy. These people are trying for solutions, and I salute you because you stand up and you keep fighting for the rights of our people, and that's what's most important, that you don't lay down. When you lay down, it's over.
Yep, and I have to say to Wodian there, I saw his video that he did marching with the banner and was really happy to see that. I thought that was great. I kind of like scrolled through it a little bit. I didn't watch it all the way through. I saw there was a little interaction there with some people, but great to see, especially considering what happened, at least from what I know, what happened to your buddy there with the Antifa. I kind of read their account of it and knew that it was probably somewhat BS to a certain extent. I've heard you speak about it as well, but, you know, it sucks to see that happen. And I hope he's, you know, doing all right from that.
haven't heard from him. I think, like, they must have been intimidating him online because he doesn't seem to be online anymore, and they just recently deleted the White Man March group for Illinois, you know, like the day before yesterday, so they have to put another one up or something that's secret rather than just closed. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, that, you know, I hate to see that, and that's how those groups operate. They're trying to scare people out of really doing anything.
Like, got out there and did it, you know, and let them know that we're not afraid of them, we're not intimidated, and they're lucky I didn't show up a little earlier, you know. I was about 15 minutes late, which sucks. I wish I would have been there because fought all five of them, you know. Get some, like, tactical military sunglasses or something where they can't mace us or something. I don't know.
And my point about the Antifa or Antifa is that, you know, they're anti-fascist, but they are more fascist than the people that they claim are fascist. And most of the people they go after have never, you know, never said that they were a fascist. They've never identified with fascists. So I think it's kind of funny. I read an article today that was saying something to the effect of this was a guy talking about the Portland event, the anti-fascist event, and there was somebody there from Georgia, I think it was a black woman, and she said something like, "Oh my God, is that the Nazis? Are those people the Nazis?" Because there were some white guys with like masks on that looked kind of mean, and he goes, "Oh no, false alarm, those guys are with us." And that made me laugh because I'm like, it's so true. The anti-fascists look more like fascists than the so-called fascists that they're fighting. And they are extremely criminal and extremely dangerous, some of these
it's
guys.
It's all about conditioning of people. It's all about conditioning us. I don't watch TV, but I recently have a girlfriend that does, and I can turn on the TV she turns on the TV when I'm here, and every fucking day, I will point it out to her. Now she's starting to see it. Every day it has something about Nazis. It has something about this kind of propaganda. Mm-hmm. And a lie has to be conditioned thousands and thousands and thousands of times over, but the truth stands on its own.
Yeah.
I mean, they try to say that fascism is controlling all aspects of life, but that seems to be what they do, you know? It's like they're trying to intimidate me. Like, they don't even have the right address down for me, you know, but yet they think they got my address and they're going to just come get me or something. Like I'm worried about it. I march through towns, obviously. I'm not scared of anybody in this town or any of them. I don't get it.
And that's good, and it's good to be brave and bold in these times, because there's so much that they're trying. There's so much that they're trying to scare us with all the time. It's like everything is, you know, fear-based in this current system, at least. Since I've been alive, it seems like everything is fear-based. And I don't like it. It's very negative. And I think that's why Americans are viewed as very negative people on an international scale, a scale like American tourists and things like that. And other countries are viewed as not decent people to be around in some cases.
People are kept in line by their fears, not by their rewards. And it's easier to control society through fear, and that's how they do it. We have this fear porn society here, like in 9/11 with the Amber Alert, this kind of alert, this is going to happen. We have this going on. It's based planes flying over your helicopters, yelling out over loudspeakers and stuff. It's all made to keep you in line, much like religion was at the time. I'm sorry to say this, but. I know this is dulling out the topic, but I'd have to agree with Frank, who, I don't know, has reemerged on the ethos, whatever this is recently, but he's right on a lot of points.
Oh, yeah. And this is just to stay on this topic just for a second here. I know that I saw an article, I think it was on the Daily Stormer, talking about Christianity and, you know, the Christian identity views on some of these things and some of the comments I was reading there. You know, people were saying that Jesus was not a Jew, that the real Semites were white people. And to that, when Jesus said in the New Testament, "I came," essentially the word they use there is for the Jews, and we could say Hebrews, Israelites. You know, he says he came for the Jews, but they would not receive him. And that he pretty much turned his said his sights on the Gentiles. So if Semites are really white people, that means that Jesus was white and came for white people, but they wouldn't accept him. So he went to the fake Jews to further his, you know, his kingdom, I guess. That's one of those things that, you know, these Christian identity people say all these things, but they don't really add up when you really start to dig into the scripture. I know that it's a very big book, but, you know, that just doesn't make any sense to me.
Sounds like a load of shit.
Yeah.
I was just saying it sounds like a load of shit. And I'll get off your network with one last thing. I think the Renegades should be called the Renaissance Network. And again, I'd have to say to Mike Sledge that I'm sorry, and that when he had Payday come on, I was like, what the fuck, man? And then when I looked at it and said, what the fuck, I'm looking at a left-right paradigm and I don't understand the middle. That took a lot of balls, Mike. And with that, I bid you adieu, gentlemen.
All right. Well, it was great hearing your call. Made some excellent points tonight. I think what we talked about, even though I was really not prepared at all, I think this is something that, you know, I haven't heard of, at least around the network, in a while, you know, some of these things, talking about money and economics. And I guess I like to talk about some of the economics and things like that, because that's currently, you know, one of my battles is, you know, how do I pay my bills? How do I eat decent food without spending a shit ton of money? And just all these other things, you know, whatever I'm using, you know, how to get that and who am I paying for it? I think I mentioned this on a show that I was looking at some supplements one day, and the company, I'll put it out there just so everybody knows not to buy it. I think it's Jarrow Formulas, J-A-R-R-O-W. I was looking at some of their supplements and went to their website, and at the bottom it said, you know, we support Israel, and they, like, actually donate money to Israel. And I was like, well,
fuck,
I'm glad I know
shit.
That now. Yeah, that's crap.
I'm just kidding.
So you gotta watch out. Sometimes when you see organic or natural stuff, a lot of that is controlled by Jews too. Like, I would say even more densely controlled than some of the alternatives. Another one. This is an interesting one. I'm sure a lot of people have heard about it. Dr. Bronner's soap. Either one of you heard of that?
I never heard of that. I heard of that fucking Dead Sea soap, though. It's from Tel Aviv or whatever. That shit.
Yeah, that as well. But Dr. Bronner is one that, I think it's Castle soap. And he has this, like, the bottle of it has all these scriptures and different quotes and stuff on it. It's really, like, kooky looking when you look at it. But
I
dug
Dr.
into him.
How about Dr. Schiff's fucking vitamin supplement that I get for my heart?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You guys ever see Country Bob Steak Sauce?
Say that one
again. Country Bob Steak Sauce, on the side of it says Christ is our CAO. A fucking company is like from this town or whatever. They have their like main place here and shit.
Yeah.
I can't believe it. A little fish on it and it says Christ is our CEO on the side of it.
Fuck you,
yeah,
Bob.
But Dr. Bronner, his son still runs the company. Dr. Bronner's been dead for a while. And I don't even think he was a real doctor. But this guy, I think he said he fled German persecution. And from the research that I did a while back, it seems that he actually was the one that created the Nazi fluoride myth. Or at least he propagated it. He wrote an article for a newspaper where he outlined the Nazi fluoride deal or made mention of it. And I thought that was kind of interesting. He claimed that he was the nephew of Albert Einstein, and his son had to admit in a documentary that he was like a eighth cousin, or like he was really, really distantly related to Einstein. But the Nazi fluoride myth, actually, the oldest account of it was a book and I can't remember the name of it, was supposedly written by a guy that was sent over to Germany, had some dealing with IG Farben. But this guy, like, there's no evidence this guy really even existed or who he was, and I have a reasonable or reason to believe that Dr. Bronner and this writer were actually the same guy. And whatever reason Dr. Bronner was putting it out, I'm not sure if that was the case, but some strange stuff. All I have to say is that the fluoride, Nazi fluoride thing is complete crap. There's no evidence whatsoever that the Nazis ever used fluoride. And we were using it in the United States, I believe, in Indiana or Illinois in the 1930s in the water. So we were really using it before anybody. Did I lose you guys, or?
I'm still here.
Okay. But had you ever heard about the Nazi fluoride?
I'm still here. Of course, they propagate that here. San Diego lost a long-standing battle, and they've enacted fluoride here as well.
Mm-hmm. And
I don't know enough to comment about it, so I can't imagine that something that's an aluminum byproduct could be good for you, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's, like, great for your teeth. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't buy it. I don't think it's as nefarious or as bad maybe as like Alex Jones and those people have made it out to be. But if it doesn't need to be in our water, and there's no point of putting it there. This is all an aluminum byproduct that is put in our water, and I've even heard some concerns over, like, radiation within the fluoride. Whether that's true or not, I'm not sure, but it doesn't need to be there. It's a byproduct that's being sold, and we're footing the bill for it when there's no need to have it at all.
Have you seen the PBS documentaries on Appalachia? It's Sunshine something, and it talks about people in Appalachia, and they were trying to figure out why they lived to be in their 90s through gardening and well water and things like that.
I haven't seen that, but I've heard some things along those lines.
Okay. Say the Okan Islands and Iceland are the longest living people?
I wouldn't doubt that at all. They seem to be the strongest moral people, where they have the ability to cast out fucking demons at will. God bless them, or whatever gods that bless them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think it's just, they got a traditional diet, and plus, you know, all the, they grow their own food and everything. So,
yeah. And Iceland, if you really, like, look into Iceland, their country is from a political structure, I would say that they are probably one of the best examples that exists right now of how a government should be operating, the type of ventures and things that they fund or invest something in, their time or, you know, whatever. They're almost completely energy sufficient, even though it's Iceland. I mean, they're not in ideal conditions there, but they do have a lot of geothermal.
It's introspective that it's a small community and a pretty much one homogenous state of a nation. So of course it would be that way. You don't have this conflicting paradigm that we have over left, right, and pulling at us to argue with other races and other things. We continue as white nationalists here to want to attack blacks, Mexicans, and other things, and in some cases, rightfully so, but we miss the bullseye right in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I see non-whites in this country as being proxies as well. That's my view on it. They are proxies. Now, are they doing bad things to white people, or, you know, are Mexicans, you know, it's not to say that Mexicans or South Americans aren't taking jobs. They're obviously hurting us whether they realize they are or whether they're doing it completely on purpose. But they're still being used. That's kind of the way I view it. They're not really, they're not at the top of the structure, and they never really will be.
I look at it this way. Every day you spend your time wasting talking about a groid being a groid or a beaner being a Mexican being a beaner or something like that, you're taking away from who's running the country and who's running the fights, who's organizing the fights and the structures. You know what? I don't really care if you're black or Mexican or whatever. I care about the existence and the furthering of the forking words by people and us carrying on in a better society to where we can sustain ourselves. And the people that are doing the most damage and hurting us aren't those.
Yeah.
They're proxies for those. So if you fight and you waste your time calling these people names and have shows where it's fun and it's great to call all these people out to say all this stuff, but you're doing a disservice to the fight that we really have, the battle that's really going on.
I agree. And I understand that we all, like yourself, you live in California, you have to deal with Mexicans or South Americans, and where I'm at, I have to deal with a pretty good mixture of blacks and South Americans. Blacks mostly within the current area that I'm at. You know, some in Canada live in fairly white areas. So we all, I think, see things different based on our own personal experience. You know, I think that's something to consider sometimes. I mean, I think it was like Stan Hess that's been shot, I think, twice by two different blacks, like completely unprovoked. And it's like, I can understand if he hates black people because of his experience. But I haven't had that experience. And I think we all have a little bit of a different take. But I don't want to fuel more tension between races just to fuel it. You know, I'm just kind of sick of that right now.
Sure, that would make us more ignorant and more subversive and easier controlled to divide us into little groups and make us fight against each other. But I can guarantee you that you can go to certain black or Hispanic groups and they'll tell you who's fucking in control and who's running things. And there's a bigger fear in that realm, and that's why the control over the media and what's going on in the avenue that you have to have this show is being threatened every day. That's why this is the Renaissance Network.
Hey, I think we might have Boyan on now. Boyan, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. How's it going, guys?
It's going good.
That's great. Yeah, I'm just listening, so I don't know if I can add anything, but... Well, I can tell you, well, I live in Canada here, but the blacks are a minority in the country, but I'm already sick of them. So, you know,
now,
when it comes to the black...
What type of interaction do you have with blacks? Is this, like, at the store? Is this in a job, like, work field? Or, you know, like, kind of give us a brief overview of, you know, what that...
Well, look,
I
used to live in a building, right?
Mm-hmm.
60 apartments, and police was always here, actually squad, you know, the squad team was sent a few times here in the building concerning the droids, you know, drugs, prostitution, everything, you know, and that's quite in a middle-class, you know, building, middle-class area, if you like, and, you know, it's all the same everywhere with them, so I kind of tried to escape from them in a sense, I'm not saying not trying to talk to them or anything, but, you know, it's, I think we should just keep, you know, send them back, you know, the way I see it. It's dangerous what we're doing here, you know, trying to give them some territory. You know, I think they should have their own lands with their own people, and that's it. It's over.
I agree.
I don't know if somebody disagrees here, but, it's not just the miscegenation thing, you know. It's the violence, the rape, you know, the everything, you know. I can go on and on and on, you know. It's they should be sent back, man.
I agree with you on that. I want to be separated. That's where I stand. Like sending them back, I would like a fair amount of that. but separation really is like the main thing I want. I want us to at least be allowed to have the right to separate. But even HUD in this country is trying to take that away through fueling diversity in neighborhoods. And we know that they're not going to send 100,000 white people to move up into Harlem. They're coming to our neighborhoods.
Yeah, but when is it going to stop, you know? When all this nonsense, it's going to stop. I mean, I would like to know that.
And that is a good question. And I've been wondering the same thing.
The thing is, guys, we cannot afford the next following years that the borders are still open and another 10 million from Mexico and another 10 million from Somalia, Mogadishu. You know, it's just unaffordable.
It's never going to start there. It's a control opposition to make you hate them and to concentrate on them instead of concentrating on the lawmakers who are making the policy to allow them to come in there, sir. It's made to make you concentrate your energy on them who are fucking hapless idiots. Fools who are coming there, who are going to move there to get a better life, because that's what all human beings would do. And I'm not taking up the cause for them, but it's made to do that, to deflect from who's making the laws to make that happen. That's what's going to happen. And that's who's going to do it. And as much as they can play the fight with you and them, they will.
Mm-hmm. So, and like, only the producing class can put their foot down and say enough's enough, or what?
Does that work? Has that worked? No, because it's all been hijacked. The whole system has been hijacked. Come on, we know that. That's why we're here, right? We're all good men fighting for the truth and the cause. Has it worked, William? William, will it work? You tried your hardest, and they ostracized you and put you out, and you did only things for noble purposes to try to teach people realization, to try to awaken them to the plight of your people. And what did they do to you? They ostracized you, put you out, damned you, pepper sprayed you.
Same.
Well, no,
that's what I was getting ready to bring up is that, you know, as far as the white man march with, who was it that went out there and fought against it? It was white Antifa. I saw the videos of these people, and there was like, it was almost 100% white opposition. You know, I didn't see any blacks attacking people or Mexicans attacking people. It was our own. So I mean,
yeah, I know.
Consider
are the biggest traitor. Our own people are the biggest traitor out there.
Yeah,
like
traitor. Ignorance is the biggest traitor to our people.
Yeah.
I think our people are genuine and loving people, and they don't have the knowledge, and they've been fucking fed this knowledge through television, through other things, and we have failed in our mission to teach them, and maybe we don't have a strong enough ability to break them from these things, but it is possible. And when you sacrifice yourself and you stay true and when a man stays strong to a cause, other men, I don't care if you're black, white, Mexican, they will see that, and people will rise. People will rise.
Hey, I want to read Blute and Bowden said in the chat, as long as we are in a mixed society, you can't openly talk about your beliefs without being cautious as to who hears you. That is bullshit, and I completely agree with him on that. And what's funny about that is the college that wanted to have some type of anti-racist or whatever get-together, like explicitly told, or like they didn't invite white people and told white people they weren't invited. And when interviewing one of these people behind it, they said, well, we didn't want white people there because our people are people of color aren't going to be able to comfortably talk in front of white people. And I was like, he actually does have a point, and I do agree, but don't pretend that you're for all races with a group like that when you are not. And they got proven that they weren't for all races. They were for non-whites or people of color, as they like to say.
our message comes through cloudy also when we say things like droids and beaners. We know where we stand. We know where we believe in our racial harmony and our pride in our race and the fact that people don't stand up to it in the right way. Or it's not even it's through frustration more than ignorance that we go through and we fall into this paradigm of fighting in a left-right, that we have to stand up, and when we are right and we stand up for a racial message that is right, people will not be able to deny it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just seems like nationalism is being used by the Jews to divide us or something, you know? It's like, you got all these white people fighting for internationalism, but, like, they have no respect for nationalists, you know, at all. It's like, man, it's like if we're all working class and we all want to overthrow capitalism, like, why do they hate us so much? It's like, we're not saying
because
we want
you're
to
working class, capitalism. They want to divide you. You're working class. You just said it right there. There's different classes.
Yeah, you know, I'm saying these internationalists, these leftists, these anarchists and communists that hate us and Antifa, like, we're working class, too. We all want to get rid of central authority of the Jews, and we want to get rid of capitalism. Like, why do they have to hate on us so much? Like, we're not saying we want to destroy them or kill them. We're just...
William, you're going into class. You're not going into the folk, to the people. We want to survive to our right for people. We want the 14 words to survive. We want to survive. I don't care what other people do. We want to survive because we're the 14 words, and this is what we want for our people. We want the propagation of our people.
I don't care either. The thing is that lawmakers can't change anything. Like, it seems like only the producing class can make that change, and as long as, like, we're all fighting with each other, because one people wants to preserve the culture.
When can't lawmakers change that? They change the law every day.
Because I think it's just reformist.
They run the game. You were just a pawn to them. When have you ever voted where you got what you wanted? When have you ever voted where you got what you wanted or what you thought was just? And even the people that thought was just didn't get what they wanted. We play the game.
They're still believing in law and reformism. Like, they're not taking stuff into their own hands. They're still having someone represent them. And once you're represented by someone else, you no longer represent yourself. You know what I'm saying?
They count the votes, my friend.
Peter, a legislator.
They count the votes.
Huh?
They count the votes. You know what? I hear everything you're saying, and what you're saying is so true, young man, but they count the votes. It doesn't matter what you say, what your political action is. The best things you can do is go against them in the systems and smaller systems of what they're saying. We can only make inroads in a smaller way. And if we fight all the different societies that are out there to try to make the inroads to make the better for the 14 words, we're never going to make it better because we're fighting with all these groups. We have to push forward our identity, who we are as a people. And of course, we're never going
to... I mean, white workers, like, are there enough white workers to really overthrow capitalism and centralize Jewish power? I mean, is there enough of us on our own? You know what I'm saying? Like, if they've got all of us divided, like, how do we actually beat them? You know what I'm saying?
On a microcosm level, where we farm, we subsidize, we take ourselves away from their banker system, we take ourselves away from their unionized labor, we take ourselves away from all of this, and refind ourselves, repatriate our lands, repropagate our people, and preach the truth that is our people. But it's not going to be through hate. It's not going to be through saying this race did that or this race did that. It has to be through a true Aryan nobility where we push ourselves to strive ahead through example, which we have through thousands of years, and we will. And you're a leader of that. You stood out there where many people would stick back with their hands in their pockets, scared or little bitches. And you've done it. And I'm not here to denigrate you at all, sir.
Well, I hear you saying. I just don't get, like, it doesn't seem like we're enough of the producing class to actually overthrow capitalism on our own or centralize Jewish power, you know. And, like, all the internationalists are hating on us, but we're all wanting the same thing, you know, except for we want to maintain our culture and our people. That's the only difference. And what we want is we want to maintain our culture and our people, have a classless society, but have it among our own people. And that's really the only difference, you know. Like,
we'll never be denigrated as the same, sir, because we're ideologically thinking people that want fairness in these indoctrines that we've written, that have made this society, made other societies, made people the greatness of what they are. and we do it not through smiting other people and putting them down, but through the actions of our deeds, and we will persevere.
Hey guys, I want to take a quick break here, and we'll come back. I'm just going to play like a 1.5 minute song. I just really need to take a break real quick, and we'll see you guys on the other side. Okay, and we're back. Pretty interesting talk so far. I still have Wayne and Wodian muted, but Boyan, did you want to make any comment there before I bring them back on?
No, I'm good, actually.
Okay. All right, so we'll bring them back up. Okay,
Andrew,
you guys should both
how
be
you
on
doing,
buddy? Now. Doing pretty good. Better now.
I didn't mean to take up your show. I know that you got a lot of valuable and insightful people out there listening. I just thought I'd give you a perspective from the boots on the ground and the man that sees things the way that I do.
Sorry, you had cut out there for just a second. I kind of missed the last part of what you said.
I just said it's been a great night. Thanks a lot, man. Thanks for letting me voice my opinion.
Well, I enjoyed your call. I was just kind of sitting back and listening to what you guys were discussing. I think that goes to just really show that we all have our own ideas of how things should be done or what's going to work and what's not going to work. And I don't think any of us are completely, 100% right. Or can know that we're 100% right, but these are discussions that we need to have so we can kind of figure out. Really, I look at it as if we are white nationalists and if we are racialists, white racialists, and believe in the 14 words, if we believe in furthering our cause and building a better future for our race and our kin, our family, we have to kind of define what exactly that means and what, what's acceptable, what's not.
I would ask you if anything that I've said has been deferring to what means to be the 14 words or to further our existence as people. And if you would, I would like to hear some constructive criticism of what you think is ideologically wrong on my part.
Oh, I personally, I didn't see anything that I could really completely disagree with. You know, some little things maybe here and there I would think along a different line, but you know, we have to. I think this is something that a lot of us need to learn to do. Is, you know, when somebody gives you their point of view, you need to look at it and not knee jerk, because you have a different point of view, and you try to look at what they're saying, what they believe, and you know, see if it makes any sense. And if it makes some sense and you still disagree, you know, tell them, well, I see why you think that, but I think a different way, but, you know, I don't necessarily think you're wrong. And
right,
it seems like a lot of people in this thing can't do that.
That's why
they lack ability. Hmm?
That's why I'm asking the questions that I am, because, you know, I think this network is a godsend, or God, the God sent us to this network. And like I said, it should be called the Renaissance Network,
mm-hmm,
instead of the Renegade Network. We shouldn't have to be renegades hiding in a hole saying this, because it should be an altruism. It should be a truth that's out there in society, and we should be able to speak this and tell the truth to people. But yet we're ostracized, and we're threatened with our jobs, we're threatened with our careers, we're threatened with jail,
mm-hmm,
we're threatened with all these different things. But yet these truths ring out amongst our people. And I only try to tell people that at times we tend to fall into that left-right paradigm. And I'm not saying there's atrocities committed by these other races and these other things. But we tend to lean to blaming these races and stuff, we become victims. And when we become,
mm-hmm,
victims, we tend to lose the sight of who the true game maker is and who's running things. We all know that. Kyle, Mike,
yeah,
Dana, Siegfried, you, Andy. I mean, I could go on and on. Frank, Bob, Wolf, Wall Street. There's just an endless supply of people telling you this. And they're not just telling you this like you're listening, but you're listening with a keen mind's eye and dissecting what they're telling you. And if you research,
mm-hmm,
the truth, you'll find the answers. And if you truly seek to find the truth and make yourself better and make your people better and help them in this struggle that we're all in, and we're in a struggle. We're in a war. And we're not going to win all of these battles, but when we get tied up in the quagmire of fighting a battle with somebody on a left-right paradigm, we're losing the war. We got to win the war.
Yeah. And it's interesting that you bring up the victim mentality, and that's something that I've started thinking about lately, is that, you know, I see a lot of people that are – and myself, this is a personal thing. Like, personally, I saw it within myself first that, you know, I kind of sell myself short sometimes, because I'm like, you know, they're doing this to me, they're doing that to me. And to parallel it to the blacks, I mean, we saw what they did with the civil rights movement and how they act now, to where it's like, if anything happens to them, it's because of the white man. You know, every time any little thing happens, it's because of the white man. And it's really simply not the case. It's in some cases, maybe it is. Maybe there is a little racism. I think it's very, very few and far between as far as white on black racism. But they assume it. And I don't want to assume that every time something happens to me, it's because I'm white. Like, that just is kind of a paranoid line of thinking. But at the same time, there are things that are happening to me and to everybody else because we are white. I think we need to remain kind of grounded and centered and not jump to conclusions on too much and become to where we're like blacks over racism. And one thing I want to point out is, like, people that I've seen posting videos of, look at this racist black or look at this racist Mexican attacking this person or that person. And I say, okay, yeah, that's wrong, but does that give us the right to, you know, just throw out nigger all the time and act, you know, indecent or act like assholes to black people? You know, I see that as furthering their own mental victimhood, because they go, yep, I should have known, you know, this white person was going to do this to me, you know. It kind of proves their point, and that's why I just try to be decent to people until they act you know, otherwise to me.
Well, I would say this, that on the Bob test can show that Kyle smashed that guy left and right. People had to call in, and they had so many fucking proxies, and the only people that could smash him or say anything in opposite of what he was saying is when they threw out shit about the network and had mentioned stuff where they were using racial connotations. And I think that the whole message, what the network says, what people say, the information that's given out here, the validity of people, the sincerity of people, the just overall sacrifice of the people here that come on this network and put themselves on here, put themselves out there and risk their job, their livelihood, they're ostracized by their neighbors, and yet we have a finite, and I think a lot of people, a lot of hosts, don't get me wrong, any host listening to this, and this will probably be the last time I ever get accepted on your network, but
somebody is like getting some bad feedback there.
Okay,
yourself and see.
Yeah, sure. I mute myself. Give me a second.
Yeah, I think it was you.
Second.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, great job, Leon, or Beef Cube, or whatever, Chicken, whatever. But what I'm going to say is that we do a disservice to ourselves because we have a legitimate cause, and we are standing up for the rights of our people, and what we're being ostracized, put out, being just destroyed on a level every day that is not right, and we lose our moral high ground when we allow ourselves to go play into this left-right paradigm. We're stronger than that, and they know. And they know who the cause is, and we know what's going on, but it's they're playing us.
No, I got an idea. Like, why don't we use internationalism against them? You're like, oh, we're internationalists with respect to all nations or something, and be like, Goyim of the world unite, or all power to the Goyim, you know, like flip it around on them or something, you know? Like, internationalism with, like, a real respect for all different peoples and their tribal boundaries.
Fuck those motherfuckers. Did I say that? Did I come out of the internet? Oh, shit. Just kidding. Just kidding.
And this is a point I want to make, is that I don't know how many people heard it. Kyle played an interview that he did, I think, this morning with a black radio host in L.A., and this radio host played, like, the clips of, can't remember the guy's name, I think it's Kwame something, maybe I'm wrong, or he's got a very African-sounding name that, you know, said that, I think the only solution is that we're going to have to kill all the white people, you know, and he played Jamie Foxx talking about killing all the white people in the movie, and he pretty much just outright says that this is ridiculous, and that he agreed that it proved Kyle's points of what he's been saying, but you have people like Tom Hartman that when Kyle brings up that same Jamie Foxx, I get to kill all the white people in the movie comment, Tom says, you know, it's a joke, Kyle. You know, it was a joke. Like, you know, I don't see you're retarded or you're stupid for thinking that was more than just a joke. So
that's a left-right paradigm, my friend. Whether you're playing at it, whether they're playing at it, whether they know it, whether we know it, we should be smart enough to know that. And if we don't, we should educate our people on the fight that is not like screaming at somebody because they're a goid or a beaner or something. We should be screaming at people to, like, be true to your heritage, find your lineage, find what's right, find your moral compass, find what's honorable to us as people, and propagate that and push us forward, because that's more important to this. They want to get us quagmired in this left-right paradigm. We're not going to fall for that. I hope we're not. I know Frank's not going to fall for that. I know Siegfried's not going to fall for that. I know Mike's not going to fall. Come on. We're not going to fall for that.
I think more the Tea Party I view as kind of like another escape valve for that left-right paradigm, because they pretty much right off the bat during that thing were saying we are separate, and then they got kind of overtaken by the Rick Santorums and the Sarah Palins these frauds.
Again,
these
who hijacked the movement? Who hijacked the head of any? I'm in a union. I know all about unions. I know all about governments and structures of governments and how they work. And what you do is you get the voice of the people, and you make a pyramid scheme, and then you hijack the top of the pyramid scheme. Come on, man. You know that.
Yeah. And they'll give us something, I think, good parallels Ukraine. Like, they let them have this big nationalist uprising, and they pretty much came in and put themselves into
the
power.
No matter what they did. The Ukraine were noble people that fought, and they lost, whether they picked the Soviet socialist regime or whether they picked the American monetary financing scheme. They were doomed. They had a choice of Coke or Pepsi. Come on. We know.
Yeah, and one thing, like, I see people, they talk about right sector and call it kike sector because there were, maybe 20 Jews in the group out of how many? Over 1,000 fighting for their freedom. And I ask, people that want to run around saying things like that, what are you doing? They might have got Jewed. But, don't act like they're a bunch of Jews because they got screwed over by a few. I don't know.
Broad brush of things. I think there's probably more than 20 Jews there, but maybe I'm falling into that left-right paradigm. But somebody was at the captain's wheel, and the captain was probably named Skavinsky.
Yeah. I agree. If you believe that most of right sector or majority were Jews, then you must think a lot more of Jews than I do. That's all I got to say about that. But I don't know. I
guess I maybe want a job in Hollywood or the banking financing or maybe the lending or the law or politics or something like that. I guess that's why I think that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of like went a little off topic there, but we can
go wherever you want, Andrew.
Yeah, we have about 15 minutes left. I'd kind of like to just ask you first, and we'll go to Wodian, and then we'll end with Boyan. I want to ask you the question: if somebody was to just ask you on the street, how do I get outside of the Jewish control grid? Like, what have you done to separate yourself from that? What would you tell them to do that they could actually do very easily? What kind of changes could they make in their life to make that change that possible?
Turn the telephone off.
I'm sorry, there's a lot of background noise. I would say that people should distinguish themselves from these jobs, these careers, and if they could move away and pick a spot of land and be reproductive in their essence and move to smaller communities and have a larger voice in these smaller communities and be more self-sufficient, that it would do just grand things on that scale. Not only that, but not incurring any debt, not incurring any of these things, and like continue on with what they're doing. But if they get quagmired in hate or any of these other things that would drag us down so we can't further our image, our people, our essence of what we are, then of course we're not going to go anywhere. We have to be proactive, not reactive. That's what I would say.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Wodian, what do you say to that? What do you think some easy solutions for us are to distance ourselves or not fund the Jewish powers or the corporate capitalist powers?
Well, on an individual level, it makes a lot of sense. It reminds me of in the Edda when it says, it's better to have a little house with a thatched roof and two goats, than to be a debt slave or something, like live within our means,
mm-hmm.
To try our best to be autonomous, making smaller communities and bringing together, our community and our skills, that's a good idea. Like, it's almost like bringing back the ancient guilds and stuff we had, before the church took away our autonomy in that regard. And those are all good things. Like, I don't know how to produce my own clothing and shoes and all that stuff. But, things like that could be good. But,
at the same time, we're still going to be buying that stuff from capitalist sources unless we had, like, entire communities where we could produce every bit of the raw materials. But I don't know. I mean, yeah, those are starts. Those are starts there, you know.
Now, since you've become aware to a lot of these things, like, could you give an example of something that you've done within your own life that has kind of taken away some power maybe from the Jews, or at least the power through the pocketbook that you might have previously given them?
Well, see, I try to, you know, I can claim my ancestral religion and everything, so that was, like, taking my mind back and my spirit and everything. And then, you know, I try not to support things that, like I'll buy organic foods. I do that. That's one thing I do. I try to buy all organic food. I try to, like, I try not to support capitalism any kind of way, really. You know, I mean, I don't even have internet at home right now. You know, I don't even have that. As far as, like, technology, like, I'm not real big on, like, a lot of the technologies and stuff.
Yeah.
I still live in town, though, you know what I'm saying? I'm not, like, out in the country or anything, like, trying to live real primitively or anything like that. The same time.
Yeah, I understand. I know, we're all...
That too, you know, so...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand. We all are kind of, we have our own situations, and not any of our situations, at least anybody I know have talked to, I don't think any of us have an ideal situation that we're living in. We have to work with what we have, and there's not a one-size-fits-all solution, and some things that might work for me might not work for other people. But I still like to hear, you know, what other people are doing to benefit themselves instead of benefiting the Jews or just somebody that they don't know or, you know, they really owe no loyalty to, is the way I see it. I like to help out people that deserve it, you know, that are decent, instead of just some nameless face behind a corporation, behind a corporation, behind a corporation. But did you have anything else you want to say, Woodian, before I go to Bouillon?
Well, say, like, try, you know, not to buy Israeli products. Look at what products are Israeli and try to boycott that way. That's another thing you can do.
That's good advice. Okay, well, Bouillon, what do you have to say to all that?
Oh, yes. Turn the television off. What about that? Learn new skills. Things like gardening, let's say. Things like, you know, gardening. Pick up a few good books, you know. Talk to your family about your ancestors. Drop the credit card. You know, stop the drinking, stop the smoking, you know, stop the nightclubs, you know, what else, you know, and create a little small community if you can. Like, here, I have zero community here, so I cannot talk, but, you know, progress slowly, you know, don't go too fast. Make sure you have a plan to succeed, you know. That's what I have to say.
Okay, well, I think that's great advice that you gave. There are many things, in particular the TV, cut off, you know, if you have cable or satellite, just cancel it. I mean, God, when I was living at home, my parents had satellite, and when I moved out, I never...
And guys...
Huh?
Yeah,
what
go outside, too, man. Go outside. Sorry to cutting you off, man. Go
You're
outside,
fine.
Man.
Yeah, spend some time in nature. That is some really good advice. I think that's
Thanks.
Something.
Andrew.
Mm-hmm.
You still there?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I spent the day going out in nature. I went 6,700 feet, and I hiked to the peak of a mountain where the clouds blew through and they blew down, and I went across a forest. It was something to behold. And our people, if you can't be recharged off of that, that's what I spent today doing. This is what I spend my days doing.
That's good, man. You know, something we I don't know, we lose sight of, especially those that we spend time on the computer researching the stuff. We forget to go outside sometimes. I know I do too much, but, you know, I'm trying to get back in the habit of spending some time outside. I don't know. There's a lot of solutions here. I'm hoping in the future that I'm able to actually start using examples within my own life, maybe doing some videos showing, like, what I'm doing. And hopefully people can get some ideas from that, because that's really a lot of things that I'm looking at as far as gardening and outdoors, like work, becoming more self-sufficient. You know, I'm learning it from YouTube, from people that are just willing to share it. And
where do you live at, sir? What region of the country do you live in? What region
I live
of
in
the country?
North Carolina. North Carolina.
You picked
so
that
southeast.
Lord. Look it up.
Say that again?
Upick.org. It has all the organic farms in per
mm-hmm.
state, per region, and what's available to pick at the time you look at the site. There's canning,
okay,
there's
UPIC.
Farming, there's... Yeah,
you said upick.org.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let me go ahead and save that. Okay. And for everybody out there, I tried to go to it. It looks like it's not showing up here. upick.org. Let's see here. Or is that, I think you might have meant pickyourown.org.
Yes, sir.
Is that it?
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Okay, I'm here. Yeah, for everybody out there, pickyourown.org.
I
if you want to find out.
Absolutely correct.
Food.
Local farms, gatherings, yes.
Interesting. Yeah, I think you had mentioned this website before. I still haven't looked into it. I do have a local farmer here that we deal with, and like I said, we try to grow our own too as much as we can, and we're expanding and getting it established. But I hope in the future, like I was saying, I hope in the future to be able to help direct, I guess, some people towards things that are working for me. And like the caller before brought up brewing, and I know that Boyan said, you know, quit smoking, quit drinking. You know, that's a good idea too. You won't have to worry about cigarettes or, you know, brewing your own beer or buying your own beer or anything. And if that's the route that people want to take, I don't think we should hinder them from that. I think we should be supportive of that. Currently, I'm not looking to quit drinking anytime soon. But, you know, we have to be, I think, responsible with it. And, you know, from time to time, I've gone through phases where I was drinking way too much and it was affecting my life. So it's, you know, it's something you got to keep check on, I guess.
That happened
it's not...
to me yesterday, Andrew.
It happens. And like Boyan, I mean, I take it that you don't drink or smoke from what you
well,
said
Well, I do
there.
Smoke.
Okay.
I do smoke, sorry. But cut the cigarettes, you know, smoke 10, you know, a day instead of 20, let's say. But
yeah,
go slowly. So,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And some people can quit cold turkey. I've quit things cold turkey like that. You know, some people can't. You know, gradual works for some people. Sometimes it doesn't. But, you know, if you see something in your life that's getting in the way of you being who you are and doing what you need to get done, you need to assess that and figure out a way to deal with it. You know, if you're smoking too much weed or if you're drinking too much or if you're smoking too many cigarettes
or pornography.
Mm-hmm. That's another one as well.
Yeah.
That's one that I think a lot of us don't talk about because we don't want to talk about it. But it is a problem with our people. I think it's fairly apparent when you just like go on the internet because it's absolutely everywhere even if you're not looking for it.
Sad. Oh, yeah.
And it's free. They don't care if you don't pay for it. They
well,
just
it's not. It's just free. It's actually they have the torrents and the movies, like a video YouTube clips, right? You know, full length, you know, 45 minutes, HD, you know, and all that
yeah.
stuff. But, you know, cut it. You should cut it off. Oh, yeah. It's destructive, so.
Yeah. Good points there. I don't know what else to say. It's like when we get on to solutions and things like this, it's kind of difficult to talk about.
Well, there's so many problems, right? And there's so many solutions, but it's a good thing, you know, at least if we can solve them, you know, we solve them. So, you have to look ahead always.
Yeah. Well, the show's getting ready to end, and I just want to thank Gitz that called in first. I want to thank Wayne. I enjoyed your call. Don't think you took up too much time. I was just kind of sitting back listening to you talk. I liked what you had to say. Boyan, enjoyed.